Hi everyone, it's been a minute. Life got a bit too crazy there for a second, as it somehow always finds a way to, but I couldn't be more thrilled to finally be back with another episode. I'm particularly excited to share this interview with you, as it was recorded quite a few months ago and it's just felt like I've been sitting on it this whole time. Things have now finally calmed down a bit for me, and I'm so happy to have the time once more to put some energy into this podcast, since it truly is and will continue to remain one of my favorite projects of all time. With all that being said, I'm Lige Morgan, and this is Boiled Over. Our guest this week is none other than Rahman Jafari. Rahman was a very early inspiration for me when I first started getting into animation, and it's been truly incredible getting to watch his journey with the medium since then. Rahman was also one of the very first listeners of this podcast, so it couldn't make me happier or feel more full circle to have him on now as a guest. Rahman, would you mind introducing yourself and talking a bit about the work you make?
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. My name is Rahman, pronouns are he, they. I live in Berlin. I'm 30 years old. Crazy. I'm an animation director, an illustrator, an animator, filmmaker. And yeah, I've been doing lots of different stuff over the past years. I've been doing lots of music videos, some short films, lots of illustration work, painting, prints, all kinds of stuff in this realm. Yeah.
Amazing. We'll definitely jump into more of the mediums and everything you've been working in. But we're here for animation mostly. So to get started, could you talk a little bit about how you like initially got started in animation and I guess what's made you stick with it?
Yeah, for sure. So I studied illustration, and for my bachelor's, I kind of like coincidentally made an animated music video because I got asked by some friends that I know from high school who are this techno group from Berlin. They're called FIAC, and they asked me if I wanted to make a music video for their up-and-coming release. And I just said yes. And I then realized I actually don't know how to animate. And then I learned animation basically on the project. It was horrible. I was struggling so much. It was really like, it was really stressful. Like I felt the pressure of wanting to make something good because I don't know, like they had a kind of big reach and it was like the biggest audience I would ever reach. And also like this new medium kind of was so overwhelmingly vast to explore. And I think I underestimated the difficulty of learning animation on the fly. But then I did, and I was drawing a lot and making this project come to life somehow. And afterwards, I somehow felt very invested and, I don't know, like very touched by the process of animating. And I just, kept going. Like I showed the project, it was released. I got more requests for more work. I started finding like a more invested interest in film that I think before it was so far out of reach that I couldn't imagine myself being a filmmaker or an animator because it felt like very impossible and kind of inaccessible compared to drawing. And then from there on, I just stumbled forward somehow. Like every project taught me something new. Every new thing that inspired me taught me something new. I started going to festivals a lot. And yeah, now that's what I do kind of, yeah.
So that first project that you worked on, were you basically just teaching yourself everything at that point, just while you were on the job?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess so. Like, I think there was like one animation class, I think, that I took in uni before, but it wasn't really it was somehow more like an incentive to start animation, but I didn't really take the class so much in the end. Yeah, I think like I just looked at lots of stuff. I studied animation that I enjoyed. It was a very naive and very beautiful process, I think, because I mean at this point it's been like, what has it been, like 6 years now or something? So I was 24 and I already had like a sense of my visual language roughly, I think. But then when I discovered animation, it was so fresh somehow because I looked at these things, I think, with the excitement and the naivety of like just finding something super new right? Like it was so new for me. So everything was crazy exciting, but I already had the skill set to understand some stuff, right? Because I've been drawing and making images for a long time. So I thought like I could somehow apply the, like have the newness of like something completely fresh with a bit enough of a knowledge of the medium, I think intuitively, so I could digest it. And I would just like, yeah, I would watch a lot of films and started to find my favorite animation directors. Like, for example, I love Masaaki Yuasa. I love Satoshi Kon. And I just started to find more of the things that I liked. And I just started to try to understand it. I would look for interviews, read up on their thinking, go frame by frame through the films and just try to understand how they edit, how... Also just how movement works. Like I didn't know how to move a thing yet. So I was very confused somehow about it.
So really looking at these people to kind of like understand theory in addition to like the practical application of animation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then like also a lot of just Tumblr. Instagram was already a thing, but I think it was still like a good time for Tumblr. And I would discover like the people that I know, I'm very humble to say, like, they are my peers, kind of. But back then, they were just, like, these unreachable giants for me. Like, I don't know, Benji, for example, Benji Brook, I found his work, and, like, he's lovely and super sweet. But back then, he was, like, this infinitely far away magician somehow. Mm. Or, like, I don't know, filmmakers like Rika Bukshi, which I loved when I discovered her work. And now I think, yeah, and they all feel like they are somehow close and approachable, but I would look at all of these people and just try to learn what they do by watching their work and trying to find interviews and lectures by them and study them. Yeah.
Just going back a little bit to all of these mediums that you mentioned, I'm super excited to talk about that because I think some of your characters are some of the most unique and like easily recognizable out there. And I've always kind of been curious, like what your process for character design is like through that first music video you did, maybe even like earlier work, and how these characters have kind of evolved throughout the years.
Mm. Thank you, first of all. That's very sweet of you to say. I think characters for me, they are like very central somehow to what I do. I think it comes because just when I started drawing as a child, I was always like very fascinated with making up my own characters and was also like inspired by characters I would see in cartoons and such. And my first kind of like fully real jobs in visual arts and design were working as a character designer for video games. That's kind of like how I financed my studies. So I always had like this very intimate relationship, I think, to the characters that I was drawing. And at some point, I think I developed a sense of how I wanted my characters to feel specifically. And it wasn't so much only like a visual logic to it or like some kind of formula or something. It was more like I wanted a specific feeling from them that I couldn't really pinpoint yet. But there was like one or two drawings I remember like 5-6 years ago, roughly around the time I started animating. I made like a drawing that a friend of mine saw and he said like, wow, this is special, like you should do more of this. And I was like, yeah, you're right, actually this feels somehow like a new thing. I don't know what it is, but it feels new. And there was something in the body and the posture, like there was like a, I think my characters, for example, the way they carry themselves is like there's like a security in them and there's like a vulnerability and a softness in them, and they never have these like power stance, triangle pose, spread apart legs. Like they're always a bit, you know, they are fragile in the way they hold their hands, and they are, you know, have like a certain uncertainty in the way they are posing. And I think part of this was in there. Then also, I think this character had like more like a soft body that had fat and that had like, no, you know, you don't, not like an anatomical drawing where you can see the muscles or whatever. It was more like a body like mine, for example, where I could somehow translate how I see my body into a body that, yeah, that would represent my physical feelings somehow. So yeah, over time, I think this logic for what my characters are has developed to a point where even if I translate them from drawing to 3D or into movement, like I just know how they're supposed to look and to feel, you know? And now it's like a very specific thing. I can't, there are some markers I could name, like For example, I like to give them a little bit of these mouth folds always, and their tails are a bit like this, and they often have like these little bit of like a unibrow here, and like they're just elements that I can point towards. Like this is the things that I often draw, but there's just a feeling to them that I know when I see it, you know?
Mm. And it's so cool that that feeling carries over through all of these different mediums. I'd love to talk kind of about your shift from 2D to 3D, or at least like maybe not shift, but your kind of like learning of 3D a little bit. But before that, I'm definitely curious. You mentioned working with video games, and is that something that you've worked with since that job that you had, or something that you ever plan to work with again?
So this is the job that I wanted to have in the beginning of studying. Because I thought like this is where I can develop characters but also make a living from them and also see them applied in some way. And it was about making worlds and making universes. And animation seemed so far away, I couldn't really conceptualize this as a job somehow. And video games, I don't know why I felt more approachable. And I worked in like freelance and in one or two different companies in-house also. And part of it was fun. But I think the subject matter didn't interest me so much. Like I did a lot of like robots and like monsters, and it felt very samey somehow. And I felt like I was kind of like just regurgitating the things that are the tropes of a lot of video games. And I was asked to reproduce the same imagery that I couldn't really connect to. And I mean, now I made a music video. My last one includes both monsters and robots. So I somehow in the end, that's like a full circle moment there. But I think back then it just felt somehow for me not so interesting content wise. So I just tried to get out of it. Like it made me feel really sad after a while. I noticed my sense of my own voice disappeared more and more as a kind of like sacrifice on the altar of trying to please clients. And then I noticed it made me really sad, like really, really sad actually. And I totally lost my own joy in making visual art. And yeah, and so I don't know if I would ever come back to video games, it would need to be through a project that I feel connected to, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I can completely understand like how, like as a character designer in that role, you could like very easily fall into that, like in that world. It just seems far too common, I think. But yeah, I guess hopping back over, would love to talk a little bit about your shift kind of like from 2D to 3D. And I know you still do quite a bit of 2D and it often pops up in your 3D work. But I'm kind of, yeah, just curious about that transition and what that was like for you. And I guess how you go about marrying the two now.
I remember my first interest in 3D was actually way like super long ago when I was like 13 or something. I think Blender just released like some early version back then, and they showed, there was like this film, Elephant's Dream or something like this, some title like this.
This and, sounds so vaguely familiar.
It's like, I don't even remember what it was. It was like this, some, I don't even know, but I just remembered like somehow seeing this, or like somebody told me about it, and then I downloaded it, and then I tried to make like some character. But it felt very technical and super far, like very not intuitive for me as a young teenager. So then I never touched it for years and years. And then I went to Pictoplasma for the first or second time, I think in 2017-ish or something like this. And I saw the work of Jaron Braxton, Nikita Diakour, maybe Julian Glander, like people who do these stuff that felt very like in the best terms possible janky and like punk somehow, and not as if technical perfection is needed to do something in 3D. And then I was just like, I kind of was very curious, and I tried to make something in this. So I downloaded Blender, I started to make some stuff, but it didn't really amount to much. And back then I just started working together with a friend of mine, Daniel Almagor, and we made a music video together, and we thought maybe we could incorporate some 3D, because I just got into the software and I had some basic knowledge. So we just kept exploring it a bit more. And then there were like some elements that we introduced here and there in the music video that were 3D. And then on the next project, a bit more. And then on the next project, it was fully 3D. And then I started, like, then I did this short for Adult Swim some years later, where I tried to develop like this kind of stop motion-y puppet animation look further and push like this language into a flexibility that I could use for other stuff. And then I just had this in my tool set all of a sudden, and I realized I enjoyed it a lot because I enjoyed lighting so much. Like I originally studied painting for this was my original craft, I think. Like I studied painting, and I just always loved like painting light and working with atmosphere and mood through light. And I could reintroduce this so playfully into my work through 3D. And then I realized how fun camera work is in 3D. And then I just fell in love with building these sets. It felt like, I don't know, like playing so much. And now I think there are things that I can express, I think, better in 3D than in 2D, and vice versa. So now whatever a certain project requires, I feel very lucky that I can move between these two mediums. And in neither, I am actually very technically proficient. Like if you show my 3D files to like actually proper 3D people, like it's horrible. It's super messy, bad topology, super, everything is very disorganized. Like under the hood, it looks ugly, but I know enough so that I can, with the help of some people, I can do what I want to do. Yeah.
It gets the job done. I don't think anyone would know unless they were going into your geometry and, you know, really taking a peek under the hood there.
Like the 3D animators that I have worked with, they know, like, it's really messy. Really, really, really messy. But as long as it looks fine, I'm okay with it.
I think that's a great motto to have. In mixing these and kind of in choosing or feeling out whether something should be 2D or 3D. I'm curious, especially in projects where you combine the two, how you decide whether one element should maybe be in 2D or 3D?
Like sometimes it's very inherent to the idea. If it's like a mixed media thing, for example, the last time I think I combined the two was on the Elton John video. And it was just part of the pitch because I was like writing this idea, and then I thought about, yeah, it would be cool if they become like some type of magicians almost, that through dancing they create like this fantastical world around them. But then I thought, like, how should this look? And then I had this image in my head of these like Who Framed Roger Rabbit and stuff like this, you know, these live action that mix with 2D animation. I always kind of was fascinated about this look. I think there's also like some Kurosawa film or something that where this appears. I don't really know right now which one it is, but like some, I had another thing on my mood board very predominantly. And then I just wrote this into the idea. I was like, yeah, it would be cool if they could like summon these magical characters and this universe that is entirely 2D, because I just like this idea of combining it in this way. But then, for example, on this music video that we did for Lucky Chops, for Traveler, that was like I knew 2D animation by this point a bit, so I felt confident in making 2D characters. But we thought about making what we wanted to do, like these environments that felt more like stop motion sets. So we said, like, okay, let's do all characters are 2D and all set build is 3D. So it's always a bit I don't know, in the beginning it just feels like you have a specific place for the medium, and then mixing and matching it you just have kind of like a rules set, I think, for the world.
Mm. You mentioned that stop motion look that your characters in your 3D work has, and it's something, again, that I think is super unique and very inherently like Ramon. I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about how you maybe kind of stumbled upon to that, and any little like intricacies or anything fun that you've had to deal with in kind of learning this style and playing around with this in a digital software where you're recreating this kind of very physical, tactile look.
First of all, thank you. I don't know, like I like by now it's not that rare anymore, I have to say. Like I think I see it a bit more often. I think my characters look a very specific way, but I wouldn't say that I'm like the most proficient stop motion looking 3D whatever person, because I feel like some people have really pushed it to a level of, I don't know, like craft also that I just don't have. Like, I'm just not technical enough to really fine tune it to a level that I've seen it in other people. But how it came for me was that when I was starting to do this first application of a 3D elements instead of music video with Daniel, who I just mentioned earlier, the things that we both liked the most, there was like one or two 3D things we could only find that we actually liked, but we felt like it looks a bit vague, like stop motion. And the references we had were mostly stop motion, a bit of theater, a bit of painting. And it was a very vague process to figure out how these things look. And then Harry Ballarow, a friend of mine, we met him at Pictoplasma, and then he was like a baby back then. Like, now he's a superstar, but back then he just started to do 3D. He was like really, really early days. And he asked me if he could do an internship with me. And I was also like super, like, I didn't know shit, but I just said yes because I liked the idea of him coming over. So then he came to Hamburg and he did an internship with me, and we did a project together, Daniel, Harry, and I, for adults from like this Rick and Morty bumpers thing. And there we really tried to understand the logic of what does make a thing look like a miniature. And we just discovered some rules together. Harry was already like pushing for the style, so he brought some knowledge, we had some knowledge, and we just like fiddled with it. We were like, okay, so no sharp edges, because if there's a sharp edge, it kind of suggests a small detail that can't be possible if it's a miniature, and then everything's would be a bit bumpy and things need to have this kind of texture, and then we just figured out some rule set, and then this developed a bit further when I started to do these like films of the last couple of years. And yeah, by now it's kind of like I know some things that I just can do very intuitively, but I think what makes it look good in the end, I think, is lighting. Like, I noticed you can build the coolest puppets and whatever looking 3D things. Like, if you don't light them with a sense of poetry and emotion, they still look very 3D. Like, no matter what you do, like, the models will look very 3D, but if you light them with the precision of like people who light sets or theater stages or movie sets, then you get the thing, you get something out of it that makes it feel like very beautifully cinematic and gives these characters the stop motion feel. So I think it's a mixture of some rules, a bit of lighting, personal preferences, very painterly approach. Also, I really like making images that feel almost like paintings. So yeah, mix of all of these.
At least for me, playing around with lighting is by far and away my favorite part of 3D. I don't know. It's like, it's so, so satisfying to me, because it's kind of where everything feels like it comes to life in 3D. Like, everything just kind of exists up until then. But yeah, for me, it's really like the lighting and the materials, I think, where like everything really starts to come together. So yeah, I don't know. That's cool to hear.
No, I can appreciate this. I totally understand. Yeah, it's very like somehow, like the moment when it clicks, it happens at some point, and then the scene feels like you want it to feel. But yeah, like lighting does a big part of it, I think. Yeah.
I guess speaking about working with programs and learning programs and everything, generally speaking, what does your process look like? So working digitally, like what programs do you work with? What rendering engines or anything? Or when you work physically in any other medium, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, it depends, of course, a bit on what the outcome's supposed to be. But let's say, for example, for these, like, for these last couple of music videos, in the beginning, it's very much like research, and both visually and in writing, and just collecting ideas and making mood boards, and then a lot of storyboarding, exploring the structure of the film and shot ideas and stuff. And then the first real interaction with the software beyond maybe drawing thumbnail sketches in Photoshop is that if I do 3D project, I just go directly into 3D. Like, I don't design, for example, 3D characters in 2D first. For me, the translation, it doesn't really work, I have to say. Like, I think there's so much inherently beautiful and interesting about the way form and texture relate to light that if I try to draw the things, I wouldn't even know how to capture this. And it feels kind of like a weird intermediate step. So I just start blocking and sculpting and modeling characters in 3D and designing very iteratively there. And I do this all in Blender. And basically I do everything 3D in Blender. I don't use external render engines. I don't use ZBrush or something. I sculpt in Blender with my sculpt. And like, let's say for example, then there's like, as in this Elton John video, there's like 2D bits to the music video in this case. Then even the 2D doesn't get composited from outside of Blender and into the final footage. It's like there's 2D animation mostly in TV Paint. Mm-hmm. If I do it myself, definitely in TV Paint, and most other people I've worked with, they also animated in TV Paint. And then take a PNG sequence and I put it into Blender as an animated PNG sequence with a transparent background, and I just have the 2D stuff inside of Blender. Like I tweak the shaders a little bit to give it a bit of emission, but not too much, and how much shadow, blah, blah, blah. And then I just have the whole, like basic everything, almost everything happens in camera in 3D. There's very little post after it goes out of the render. Like sometimes there's a transition maybe in After Effects where I need to combine two shots or something, but most of it is directly in Blender. Also all the shaders, all the rendering, everything. And as I said, 2D animation I do in TV Paint. I feel it's like a very intuitive drawing process. I don't know the software in depth, but I also feel like nobody really uses much of TV Paint beyond the drawing and the coloring bits. Like I don't know if everybody, many people use these keyframing tools or puppet tools or something. Maybe they do. But I think for most people, what is so good about TV Paint is that the drawing feels good. That's what I use TV Paint for. I edit in Premiere, do some color grading and a bit of post and stuff like this in After Effects. Like drawing and illustration is all Photoshop. And in terms of like analog medium, like I have a very intense sketchbook practice. Sometimes it's more regular. Like there are times when I just draw every day. There's times like right now when it disappears a little bit again because I'm writing more right now. That's very simple. It's a sketchbook and a ballpoint pen. And I don't use much more lately. Like I sometimes a bit of different materials, but it's rare. And I do also like ironing beads.
Oh, I love that.
Well, I can show you.
Like the kind of like the little pixel art ones. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love these things so much.
Yeah. That's another medium that I use lately. I love ironing beads.
Have you ever, have you ever animated with those before?
No.
Well, cause they're basically like pixel. Pixel art. Like, I don't know, maybe it would be like too video game animation for you.
I mean,
I don't want it to be triggering.
No, not at all. Like I could imagine doing it maybe, but it's so much like a recreational fun activity for me that, like, I don't. Maybe if
you,
there
you
will
don't
be
want to taint it. No.
Like for now, it's a very much like I sit at home, I drink a tea, and I listen to an audiobook or something, and then yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. I think we all need something that doesn't have anything at all to do with animation in our lives.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, but I think it's important.
So I feel like you work on so many different projects, and large scale like commercial projects and independent shorts and music videos. I feel like all generally feel very different from one another, but like in your work, for example, I feel like a lot of the commercial work feels almost more like personal work, and it doesn't really feel so different from one another. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the differences between doing commercial work and doing personal projects, and how they kind of come to fruition, both from initial process to like working with a team versus working solo.
Yeah. So, I mean, commercial work for me, it's not all the same bucket, I have to say. There's commercial work where I feel like I insert a lot of myself into the process and the final result, and I'm very invested. Like, for example, music videos. Like, I treat the music videos like short films. I put a lot of love into them. I consider them personal, like at least 90% of them. There's maybe one or two music videos here and there where I feel like emotionally less connected, but in general there, I treat them like shorts, basically. And I put a lot of myself into it. Like the music video that I did for Squid, for example, it feels super personal. It's really like my very intimate gut material that when I like do artist lectures and stuff like this, I talk a lot about like what the subject matter of this, what the root of it is. And
one of my favorites, by the way.
Thank you. I think it's my favorite music video too that I've done. These things, I treat it really like my own material. Of course, there's a bit of negotiating with the clients or stuff, or whatever the kinds of the labels, the musicians, but it's, I don't feel like I get super controlled or something by this. So yeah, there's a bit of a compromise, but not so much. But then, for example, there's like commercial work that feels a bit more like just finishing stuff. Like, I mean, an editorial, I don't do so much editorial, but when I do, it feels like it's fast. There's a purpose for it. I try to make the image that an image that resonates with me, but I don't fight to keep it my thing. Like there's like a middle ground. And then I've done three commercial direction type jobs. And on this, I barely insert a desire to express myself because it just keeps me sane, I think. Like I offer an idea maybe that I like. For example, I did this thing for Hinge, the dating app, where I had like complete total freedom. So I felt like, okay, I can just really make something cute and sweet that I would enjoy. But if it's like a commercial project where I feel like that, like I'm doing this really to just make money right now, and I don't need to express anything. And I feel like it's almost like it can be even healthy to keep like a distance, I think, there. Like I think some, I don't know, I have heard all kinds of approaches. I feel like some people, they really try to do something special in commercials. Other people, I think, are very distant from it. For me, I think I don't want to fight tooth and nail to make a commercial my baby, because then I feel like I sacrifice a lot of my, the core of what I try to protect. So I kind of try to find like a good balance of like, it's also just a job sometimes, and you need to get shit done. And commercials pay so much crazy better than music videos. Like music videos don't really pay so well. And at least if you do it with more than one person, like even these big music videos in the end, it's not like a crazy salary or something. So yeah, I realized if I can do a commercial every now and then, my life gets crazy, crazy easier. I hope that answers the question. I was rambling a bit, but
yeah, no. And I think that that's a really important answer, because I think that a lot of people do tend to forget in working on these commercial jobs and working on freelance jobs, or anyone who is an animator who has to do work in animation and also does it for play can forget that sometimes it is just a job. And it can be really hard of yourself, especially when you're a perfectionist or you love giving your all to the work that you create, to kind of step away from that and separate yourself from that idea. So no, I think that was a beautiful answer. And I think that, yeah, it is really important to do exactly that and kind of have that separation when you do animate for work and for play at the same time. You mentioned, your music video work in this previous answer. And I'm curious, in doing this kind of work, how big of a role do the lyrics play in your vision? So in coming up with the idea for the video, do you try to take things kind of literally, when I say that, I mean, as Ramon, of course, or just tend to go with kind of like the vibe of the song? Or do artists ever come to you with a clear vision of their own? How has this worked out for you?
It really depends. It's very different from project to project. Like there are some, like for example, because we just talked about the Squid video that I did. When they originally came to me, it was right after I released this Adult Swim mini short, I Want to Be the Ocean. And then they saw this, I think, on Vimeo. And then they reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to do a thing for them. And they came with a lot of material, but for another song. They sent me, it was Paddling in the beginning, another song from the album. And they sent me references. They sent me a short story to read that they felt inspired the song. They sent me themes, a little paragraph. It was really dense, like the material. And I already started writing. I wrote a complete concept for this music video. I really liked it. Also, it was, I think, a really cool idea. And then last minute, they canceled it. They said they will do a live action video. And then again, it flipped again. And they were like, okay, we wanted to do music with you after all, but for another song. And we need to start really soon. It needs to be released. And then I just wrote like a new concept without any of their material, because the material was very specific to this one song. And this new concept was super based on the lyrics, for example. Like there was like this, I mean, the song itself is also like massive. I think it's like a very beautiful, very powerful piece. But also the lyrics, they are like so poignant. And there's like this hook line that always repeats like this. That's why I don't go outside. Like for me, it was like a beautiful entry point for me to make a short kind of about like a subject matter that I always wanted to talk about. And it felt very hard to talk about this feeling of like being really unlovable and feeling really horrible in yourself and your own body and your own mind, like feeling like you are yourself are like inherently wrong. And if you go outside, people will see that, and you don't want other people to see how horrible you are. So you feel like you basically are trapped at home, not daring to leave the house because you think of yourself in such a horrible way. And I wanted to capture this feeling. So then the lyrics offered a lot. And then the sound also of the music suggested it's like a lot of scenes. For example, in the end of this music video, there's this moment where out of these rotting apples, some insects are hatching and they fly. And this idea came from how the guitar sounds, because it sounds so droning and like buzzing insects like this. And I just saw this image in my head of like these insects flying everywhere. So I was like, okay, this goes into the film. Like, I feel like it captures the moment really well. And it also worked kind of like in its metaphoric or whatever, symbolic, poetic logic, I think. And then there are other projects which are way more loose. Like, for example, this Elton John video, it was more like a vibe video, right? Like, they sent me the song. They said, like, it should feel vaguely disco, summer, fun, do whatever you want. And then I just wrote like some very simple, more visual idea about how it feels and what kind of cool stuff happens and how the outfits look and stuff. And then it's a very, very different process. And the lyrics, for example, I would say they barely played into it, because also a mashup of different other hits of Elton John. So It felt a bit like the lyrics were there, but they didn't really influence the idea fundamentally. And then, yeah, like for example, the last Ash Nico video, Ash and her creative director, Vaso, they offered me so much material that like I written a whole lore around the album and had ideas that they offered me, just talked about these ideas. And I developed my own stuff based on this and went a bit of back and forth. So yeah, every time there's a bit of a different process.
That's cool though. I feel like that keeps things kind of fun and exciting for you, at least.
Definitely, yeah. I love music videos. It's a super cool medium. It's a really great process.
You mentioned this short that you're working on and have been working on, and I was going to ask you if there's anything that you're working on that you're excited about, or any upcoming projects, or anything that you'd be able to talk about.
I'm working on a short. That's what I can say. I don't want to say too much, I think, yet, because it's like a very personal, as much like it's really close to my own life, this project. It's not like this kind of abstracted, fantastical, poetic interpretation of an experience that I had, like a lot of my other projects. It's like really very much here. It's like very earthy, very much like people in a place, in a time, and it's all this place and this time kind of, you know? And it's, if I can finish it next year, it would be really cool. So fingers crossed for this. And this is really fun, because I'm learning a lot. Like, it's so new for me. The process is so different. It's so based on also on just script writing. I've never written a script before this. I've always made storyboards, made some notes, and then in the end it becomes a thing. And now it's really like writing. And I really like it. I learn something new every day, every time I work on it. And I struggle in a really beautiful way. I felt like, for example, music videos, at some point I felt kind of safe. I knew enough of what I was doing so that I would never feel completely lost. And now that I feel completely lost sometimes, it's kind of also like a joy, you know, of feeling so vulnerable in this process. And I think it's really cool. But what I can say, for example, more about, like, I started drawing a lot more lately. And this is also an interesting process for me, because I come from illustration and from drawing originally. And I was just invited to a festival in France, in Lyon, IF Illustration Festival, which was amazing. They did an amazing job. It's from the people that make Kiblan magazine, which is an amazing illustration magazine. And they invited me as one of the five poster artists. So five of us, we made a poster and we did like lectures and stuff like this and gave talks. And then there was like lots of other stuff. And then there were like lots of amazing other illustrators who had points in the program and animation screenings. But however, what I wanted to say is I came there for illustration, which I have never been to an illustration festival before. I don't even know if they exist so much. It's always like animation or something like design. For me, being there and seeing that there were people who also really care more about my illustration work, for example, than my animation work was a really beautiful feeling, because I'm slowly rediscovering the purpose of illustration, I think, in my own practice, which is very meditative. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I have a language in the way I draw characters and the way I draw these environments and these sceneries that feels really comforting to me. And when I make it, it feels just, it's very pure and intimate, and it's very low concept and very low on the pre-production, like a bit of maybe sometimes research or whatever, but not much. And then it's just like making a thing that feels genuine in the moment and that people connect to it and that it's seen by people as something that speaks to them felt really good, because it feels like what I also experience right now, that when I draw a character, it gives me some joy that is very immediate. So I think I will just make, while I make this short, I will just make lots of new still image work, which I enjoy a lot. And maybe some prints, like they did some Riso prints based on the on this illustration that I made for them. I wasn't invested in the process. They just made it, and then I saw it and I was like, crazy. Maybe I want to do some prints now. You know, like, I don't know. Like this, I think this making illustration and drawing and stuff is like such an immediate thing for me that I just really enjoy it again. It just, like, I wasn't interested in it at all because I felt like there was no thing for me to discover. But now, the fact that I don't want to discover so much there, and it's just about making something that feels good while making it, like this gives me a lot. Like, it's really beautiful. So yeah, I'm writing short and making drawings.
Oh, well, all of this makes me really excited to hear. I can't wait for a short or Riso prints or drawings, or for you just to enjoy yourself, I guess.
Thank you, that's pretty sweet.
So yeah, just a couple more questions here and wrapping up. I'm curious, you know, it seems like your style is so eclectic from, you know, all of these different mediums and your characters and the environments that they live in. I'm curious who or what some of your biggest inspirations are, either current or maybe things from childhood that have inspired you. But yeah, anything that comes to mind.
This question of inspiration, right? Like, it's always so endless. Somebody could talk about everything. I think, let me try to be really specific, because there are, for example, poets and novelists that really inspire me. For example, a source of inspiration that I return to is Ocean Wong, who's a poet and novelist. I don't know, is he based in New York now? I actually don't know where he lives in the States, but he lives in the States. And I discovered his work through his debut novel, On Earth Be Briefly Gorgeous, and it's so everything that I aspire to do somehow. It's both very real and very personal and very anchored in the society and the politics of his biography. And it's so intimate and so personal, but at the same time, it's super magical and super poetic. And it doesn't feel like this cold realism. It feels like there's so much poetry in observing how he observes reality. It's, well, I find it super inspiring. Mm-hmm. And so I started also to get more into his poems and stuff. And yeah, this, for example, is a, it's like an influence in a way of like, I aspire to make work like he does. Then there are like filmmakers, of course, who are really important to me in both in animation and in live action. Like our peers, like the animation community, indie animation community kind of at large, there's so many people who I admire and love so much. Like I mentioned, Rekha Bookshi, for example, super inspiring to me. Or I don't know, I could name a million animators. I love the work of Nikita Diakour. I love the work of Nikki Lindroth from Bar. I love the work of Kwana, for example. A lot of my Berlin-based peers like Cheng Shu, like Pia Graf, Julia Müller, Dahl Park. Boy, I could make a list that goes on forever. Let me think about like some recent highlights. I love the work of Sophie Coco. I try to at least regularly shout out these people that influence me, because I think this in the animation world, it's so amazing. I love festivals so much. It's the best thing ever. It's a big part of why I stayed in animation, I think, because this community and this festival circuit is just so beautiful for me. It's like you point out beauty in the world to each other, or like me, you're like, have you looked at this? This is really amazing. And then you look at it and you're like, oh, you're right. It's amazing. I didn't know that if I put this tune next to this lyric, then all of a sudden a world opens up. Or if you put the eggplant next to the hummus and this way with this herb and this amount of parsley. I think it's really cool to be able to experience all of these things. So all of these things inspire me in some way.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, what you said about animation community too, and being able to experience these things together in a medium that can often feel so alone. It's really joyful and super important, I think, both for the individual and the community as a whole. I guess, just wrapping up here, we have one last question, which would be if there was one piece of advice you could give to aspiring animators or people looking to stick with the medium, what would that be? And that could be something that you wish maybe you told yourself when you were getting started out in animation. But yeah, if there's anything that comes to mind there.
Rick Rubin, the music producer, has this podcast, Broken Record, and he interviews musicians on it. And there was one that I listened to with James Blake, whose music I also really, really like a lot. And James Blake explained how after he had his first success with his debut album, and then he started collaborating with all of these amazing artists he aspired to be like so much, and he felt so humbled to work with them. And he kind of lost his own voice a little bit because he was just like, wow, I'm working with whatever. Insert random giant artist, FKA Twigs or whatever he worked with, and being like, wow, FKA Twigs is so amazing. Like, how can I even, like what can I contribute? Like, she's doing such a she's genius. Like, what can I do if I want to make music? Like, it needs to be more like this, or it needs to be more like blah, blah, blah. And then he said at some point he realized, like, their work exists already. Genius is not this one thing that everything points towards. Like, everybody has an individual genius somehow. Like, there, James Blake realized that he has his own very specific genius that is very different from the genius of FKA Twigs, for example. And that he started to search for this again. And I think this, for me, it was really a beautiful thought, because I admire a lot of people really a lot. Like, they are my peers, but also people who are far away from me. I admire them in a way that I feel very intimidated a lot. And for me, it helps sometimes to think that I'm not, like, my quest is not to be like them or to make work like them. It's like to find whatever thing is that I have and find that. And it's a very individual thing. And it's shaped by all of my experiences and all of my everything that makes up my reality, and only I know this, right? Like, people can help me to find it, I guess, right? And other people's work can inspire me to find the poetry in my own life and unearth it, but it's still, you can't really compare it. It's like a very specific, unique little thing. And I think finding this, the thing that is you, and that only you know so perfectly, your own reality, your own perspective, is inherently valuable. Like, yeah, every one of us has this thing that, which is our perspective on life. And if we live a life of compassion and warmth and care and love, if we can, then it's a life full of things to share, I think. And the hardships as well as the beautiful moments. And everyone has these. Everyone has hardships, and everyone, I hope, has also some beautiful moments. And all of this is worth to tell. And if we hone our medium, the craft of our medium, then we are able to tell the story that, or this whatever experience, feeling, whatever it is that we want to tell, then it's inherently beautiful and genius somehow, you know. And I think this is a very empowering thing, because then somehow all of us have the right to tell stories and should be able to tell them, and we should all try to build kind of like a community and a environment and a work culture or whatever that empowers as many people as possible to share their experience and give them the opportunity to develop their language. So basically what I'm trying to say is, I think everybody has an inherently valuable artistic voice, and all of these need to be heard, and it's beautiful. And we should try to foster like a sense of community where we can empower each other to do this. Like if it's like being aware of giving jobs to people who need them in times, being aware of our own worth when we negotiate for wages, helping each other with skills and tools. Like some people are fortunate enough to study this, others are not. Maybe we can share our resources and yeah. So yeah, it's a bit of this, all of this, a lot, a bit mixed, but yeah.
No, I think that that's such a beautiful note to end on. And specifically, I think that everyone has their own specific genius, because I think that that's so true and also plays into what makes good animation good, I think, is when people really infuse it with a lot of that personal detail that makes their life unique to them. Because that's when stuff becomes more accessible as a viewer too, when it's real, when it's grounded in someone's real experiences and their kind of like lived life. And so, yeah, I think that's really, really beautiful advice kind of to end on here. Well, yeah, Ramon, thank you so, so much for taking the time and joining me today. It's been such a joy getting to chat with you finally and to kind of hear about exactly. All of this. But yeah.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the spot to talk a bit about stuff. That's very fun. Yeah, I appreciate it.
So now that things have calmed down a bit for me in my personal life, I'm hoping that I can start to focus on the things that bring me joy once more, like this podcast. That being said, and no promises, but I'm hoping that you can expect quite a bit more regular content moving forward. With the very least, I'm aiming for one episode a month. This podcast has never really had a strict schedule, so it'd be silly to try and stick to one now, but this is just me checking in. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode, and I hope to see you next time for our interview with Michelle Koo on Boiled Over.